Lesson number 10, Calvary, Golgotha, Skull Face, Public Execution, the Cross, the Gibbet, the Naked Execution. Him being delivered up by the determinate counsel and foreknowledge of God. Jesus knew it all. Jesus sensed it all. Jesus could see it all from the days of eternity. Before the steel that had been used for the nails had been created, Jesus could see the nails. Before the trees had been cut down with which the cross was made, Jesus could see the soil from which it drew nourishment. He could see it all before this planet was made. Calvary was before him. In the determinate counsel and foreknowledge of God, it was planned. Every step, every act, every twinge of pain was determined upon, was calibrated and calculated before it happened, and the means for it to happen was engendered, because this was the only way by which the ultimate salvation of man might be procured. And he was taken by wicked hands and crucified. All this from the days of eternity. Part number one, utterly exhausted. As I mentioned, Christ should have died. He should have died in Gethsemane. Read Desire of Ages very carefully. He was strengthened to suffer. The first scourging might have killed him. The second scourging surely should have. But he was strengthened that he might suffer further. He couldn't carry the cross. Three times they put it on him, he couldn't even drag it. He fell unconscious to the ground. And then they nailed him to the cross. Utterly exhausted. No strength at all. And then the fierce temptations came to him on the cross. Come down! Come down! How easy would it have been for him to come down? How easy would it have been for him to rub this planet from existence and create a new one? But this couldn't have carried out the great controversy. This couldn't have settled the dispute. This couldn't have restored the fractured relationships. And so he had to go through with it. Abuse, mockery, pulled limb from limb, beaten by the Roman guards, scourged again, struck by the reed, mocked, abused, crucified. Every detail indicating that his reserves, physical, mental, emotional reserves to fight temptation, were at the lowest possible ebb. But not even by a thought did Christ consent to sin. Part number two, dying in anguish. An anguish that was multiplied by his divine sensitivity, by the special body that was prepared for him, because that he was the center of the target of satanic planning for four millennia. And with this quality of exquisite anguish, Jesus Christ was on the cross, about to pay the last particle of debt. He suffered all human anguish. Now he was going to suffer death for all mankind. Any moment he could have moved away. But every moment his cry was, "Not my will, but thine be done." He had yielded the exercise of his human and divine prerogatives to his Father's keeping. And he was not going to change his purpose till his task was accomplished. Seven times on the cross, Jesus Christ spoke. First time, prayer for the executioners. They know not what they do. And that prayer was answered. The centurion, chief of executioners, believed. Thou shalt be with me in paradise. The assurance to the repentant thief forgave his sins and guaranteed him life in the new heavens and the new earth. Third word was for his mother and for his beloved disciple. They needed to help each other. She needed his strength. He needed her wisdom. Woman, behold thy son. Son, behold thy mother. Now his work was finished. The son and the mother were joined together. 3 years and a half before, the mother thought she had lost her son. At that wedding, his question, "What is that between me and thee? Mine hour is not yet come." Mary, the woman, representative of the mystic woman, the bride of Christ, the church needed the wine of the new covenant. Now at the end, Mary, a representative of the woman, the mystic woman, the church, had her son. In the person of every man, who's born again a brother of the son, that she and he might together live toward eternity. Now Jesus thought of himself. I thirst. Why hast thou forsaken me? It is finished. Into thy hands. The time had come. The hour had struck. The bell had tolled. And he laid down his life, ready to take it again when his father should bid him. Part number 4. Dying as a substitute. If you were king, come down. But he's not going to take on a dare, even on the cross. The devil had said, "If you are king, make the bread. If you are king, jump. Since you want to be king, I will give you the kingdom. Worship." Always ifs. Now, if you are the king, come down. But Christ never took on a dare. He knew what he was. His father knew who he was. There was no need to prove to the devil who already believed and trembled. Because he could not save himself, he could save others. He saved others, he could not save himself. And so, if we are risen with Christ, we should set our affections where he is above, and we should seek the powers and the graces and the vision and the direction that come from him. So as our substitute who died, he died to save us. And in that he dies, he now lives to God, came up out of the grave, and bids us set our affections upon him. Part number 5. Through Calvary, he looked beyond the tomb. Thou shalt be with me in paradise. That was an act of faith. I say to thee today, when the whole world is against me, when I have been betrayed by one of my disciples, when all my disciples have forsaken me, when my own nation have rejected me, When in this darkness my father is hiding his face from me and I am suffering death for every man, I tell you today, with me, you shall be in paradise. I am going to get there. He looked beyond the tomb. I go to prepare a place for you in my father's house. I go where? Across the Jabbok, across the Kidron, through Gethsemane. I go where? To Annas, to Caiaphas, to Pilate, to Herod, to Pilate. You go where? Along the Via Dolorosa to the old skull face. You go where? To Joseph's tomb. I go through that tomb, to my father's house, to prepare a place. And if I go, and he hadn't gone yet, I will come again. He looked beyond the tomb. The focus of the week concentrates on joy versus shame. Who for the joy that was set before him despised the shame. Wonderful thought, isn't it? All the shame. The shame of being born out of wedlock. The shame of living in a home such as he did, in a town such as he did, among a people such as he did. The shame of having a price upon his head, being haunted by spies, every footstep dogged by a pseudo-assassin. Ashamed of the ridicule and reproach, despised it. That's of no consequence. Pushed it to a side. Hardly could ignore it, but refused to let it get him down. He despised the shame for the joy that was set before him. And what is that? Seeing many sons and daughters in glory. Seeing us. You and me, getting ready for his father's kingdom. Preparing for those mansions that he has already prepared for them that love him. That was a joy that buoyed him up. The joy of seeing human beings saved in his father's kingdom forever. Escaping the corruption that is in the world through lust. Coming out of the prison house that Satan had bound them in. The joy in their joy on that day caused him to despise the shame.